Begin tonight. Does anybody need a study guide? Everybody have what they need? Anybody? Okay. So I'm going to begin tonight with something I left out last week, which was actually really, really important. So Kim, thank you for calling me on that. And last week, the last, one of the last statements that I had made, in fact, the statement that I didn't say last week was when we were talking, I was talking about accidental belief. Remember, I had talked about how, when we ask somebody, so why do you believe what you believe? And I was trying to challenge us last week and really the week prior about could we articulate to somebody and tell somebody why we believe in Jesus, why we believe in Christianity? Why are we willing to risk everything? Because after all, the Muslims could be right. The Hindus could be right. These different groups, these different religions could be right. And so what I said was, a lot of us, though, our answer would fall into one of those categories that really I just sort of labeled as accidental. In other words, well, I believe because my family believed. That's how I was born up. That's not something you did on purpose. That's just happened to be, that's how you grew up, and those kind of things. So what I said, what I meant to say and give to you was that accidental belief is not nearly as good as evidential faith. Evidential faith. That's where you fill in last week's study guide. Now, what does evidential mean? Well, evidential means exactly what it sounds like. It means evidence. We've been talking about we cannot know for sure. You cannot prove God exists, but what we're looking for is a preponderance of evidence, which means when I look at everything, when I consider this, when I consider that, I listen to what this group says, I listen to that religion, I listen to what the atheists say, I listen to what the scientific community says, I listen to what the pastors say, I listen to what my Christian friends say. When I look at everything, I read the Bible, when I weigh it all out, this thing of Jesus seems to be the most likely truth. And that's really what we're talking about. So in light of that then, the big where we ended up last week was Jesus gave us something that other religions' leaders did not give them. Jesus did not give just a personal or a private vision. That you think about it, Muhammad, for example, he taught his people something that he could not substantiate. Right? He said, "I got a vision from God." Okay, prove it. Can't prove it. You just have to take my word for it. The Hindu sages, the Buddhists, and all of those groups, all those religions, they basically came about. It would be no different than if I came, let's use an even better example. Let's look at David Koresh. How many of you remember that name? You all are too young for that. You're not, Keith. You're old. The rest of you, you're almost 40. But we know that name, David Koresh. What did he do? He said, "I have been given a private vision." And he got people to listen to him, didn't he? He had no evidence, no proof, nothing public that he ever made. He didn't make anything publicly provable. But Jesus did. See, Jesus didn't make it based on a private vision. He made it based on a public visual. What was that public visual? He said, "You're going to watch me die. You're going to watch my heart stop beating. You're going to watch them put a spear in my side and you will not see me move. The doctors will test and see whether or not I'm still alive. They will see me dead. I will be buried, and then you will see me rise again. You will see me interact with you." That's what he said. So he made it very public. Basically what Jesus did, he said, "I'm going to prove it to you." When we think about it, there are some people that would, that would say, "Well, boy, we shouldn't need evidence. We shouldn't be looking at all that." Can I ask you a question? Why did Jesus do miracles? Does anybody know? Why did he heal people? Yeah. I mean, obviously he cared about them, right? But he did it because he wanted to prove who he said he was, right? And there's many instances of that. We'll get into that here in a little bit. So let's get into this study guide tonight then as we talk about evidential versus accidental. This is what I've titled it tonight. I think it's important that Christians begin to, not even so much for our faith. Look, if your faith is strong, that's good. God bless you. That's wonderful. So is mine. However, all of us could use a little bit more reassurance. Yeah. Couldn't we? Yeah. I mean, after all, we're risking it all. Mm-hmm. And the closer you get to death, the more we hear about death, the more we see young people die, it's even more important. But that's the first thing. But the other thing is, if we're going to reach this world needs more than rhetoric now. It's not your grandma's world anymore, to where everybody believed in God already. There needs to be some evidence that we talk about. So last week, I kind of finished up with the big, the foundation of what Christianity is. We'll get into that here in just a second. Let's get into study guide here. So let me just begin. Jesus was no fool. He was no fool, and he did not expect us to have blind faith. He did not expect us to have blind faith. Now, there's a lot of people that think faith is all about believing in something that you cannot see, and that's partially true. However, Jesus gave people something they could see so that they could then extend that what they see into believing in things they can't see. And so Jesus was no fool. He didn't expect us to have blind faith. The person of our faith today is not visible to us, right? Has anybody seen Jesus? No. Have any of you seen Jesus? No, good. So I'm always afraid. Questions like that are so dangerous. I don't even know if I would do that on a Sunday morning. We haven't seen Jesus, but all we can go on is what the people who did see Jesus said, right? That's why we believe what we believe. Now again, that's why we should believe what we believe. If you believe only because your mom and dad told you it was true, well, that's really not a good reason to believe. It's important for parents to tell their kids that, but that's not a good enough reason. So the person of our faith isn't visible to us, but he was visible to a certain group of people who then recorded the stories about what he did. Now there are some people that would say, well, you know, that's, you know, the Bible's all made up. That was just people that just made that stuff up about Jesus. There's no way to prove that today. There's nobody alive today who would have any testimony about that. Do you have to have somebody being alive today to tell you that somebody was real? I mean, was Aristotle not real? There's nobody alive today that knew Aristotle, right? Are you sure George Washington was real? No, wait a minute. Now think about it. Why do you believe George Washington was real? History books. And history books never lie. And, I mean, all you have to do is Wikipedia. I mean, Wikipedia says, you know, talks all about it. Look, but you see what I'm saying? At some point, you have to go back and you have to trust and you put some stock in the things that people wrote at the time. So we begin our faith journey tonight really with, I guess we could call a question, did Jesus exist? And I was going to spend tonight doing that. I was actually going to spend tonight going through all the secular evidence that Jesus actually existed, that he was really a person. But you know, the more I thought about it, that's a waste of time. Because there's no need to take an entire Wednesday night and honestly bore you by trying to prove in some way or give a preponderance of evidence that Jesus was real. Because virtually no scholar of any reputable degree denies that Jesus existed. All right, so for your study guide, here's what I think how I put it. No scholar denies the historicity of Jesus. There's a word for you, historicity, as opposed to historical. Now follow me. Historicity means, did he exist? In other words, is he a real person in history? What is debated is the historical Jesus stories. In other words, there's nobody that doesn't think that he existed, virtually nobody. But what they question is a couple of things. Did he do, or was he who he said he was? So can I ask you, who did Jesus say he was? He said he was the Son of God. He said he was the Messiah. He said he was the only begotten of the Father. And he said that he was a future king. And then the second question then would be, you know, did he really do what others have said he did? See, now he said he was going to die and rise again, and then other people said, yeah, he did that. They said he did miracles. You know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, they wrote stories. You know, Paul, you know, some of these, Peter and some of them, they wrote these stories and they said, this is what Jesus did. John wrote the Gospel of John. He said, I am compelled to write this because of the things that I've seen him do. And so John was putting into writing what he said that he saw Jesus do. So really, those are the questions. So I'm not going to spend the time tonight asking the question, did Jesus exist? Because again, that's kind of universally understood. What I do want to ask, though, tonight is this, did he rise from the dead? See, the most important claim that he made was that he was going to rise from the dead. Paul agrees kind of with this. You know, the one question that really answers them all is, did he die? And was he resurrected, or did he rise from the dead? So Paul agrees with that claim of these. Well, let's get right into this. 1 Corinthians chapter number 15. And notice he said this. He said, "Moreover, brethren, I declare to you the gospel which I preached to you, which also you have received and wherein you stand." Now, here's what he's doing here. He's reminding the church at Corinth. He said, look, I want to remind you of what this whole thing is all about. I want to remind you of what you chose to risk everything on. We're calling it the gospel. He said, so here's what it is. Let's make it really clear. Here's what the gospel is. Here's what you've placed your hope in. It wasn't the golden rule. It wasn't even the Sermon on the Mount, right? It wasn't blessed are the peacemakers and blessed are the meek and all that. Here's what it was, verse 2. He said, by which you also are saved, if you keep in memory what I preached unto you, unless you have believed in vain. I forgot, there's one more verse here. He said, so basically, he said, unless you have believed in vain, what I told you about is what you put your trust in. In other words, if it's not true, you're hopeless. In fact, if you pick it up in verse 14, we're not going to read it tonight. But he said, he went on to say, if there is no resurrection, you got no hope. If there's no resurrection, if Jesus didn't resurrect, then you're not going to resurrect. And if you're not going to resurrect, you got no hope. That's basically what he said. So let's pick it up then, verse number 3. Here we go. Verse 3. He said, for I delivered unto you first that which I also received. Now what's he saying there? He's saying, did the Apostle Paul, let's stop for a minute. The Apostle Paul was a theologian, but he was more of an intellectual, right? He was a Pharisee. He was a smart guy. He knew 5 different languages. He was able to talk to anybody about anything. He was on a fast track politically to stardom and before Jesus called him. But here's what he said. He said, somebody else told me about Jesus. Do you see that? He said, I have not personally seen it. He said, but this guy saw him, and here's what he told me. And then I told you. How that, and here's where he identifies very clearly, here's the claim, here's what Christianity is founded on, that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, verse 4, that he was buried, and that he rose again the third day according to the Scriptures. So first of all, this is what Paul is identifying as the crux or the foundation of the gospel. That's what we talked about last week. And so he's identifying exactly what that claim was. We would call this kind of his official claim. It was based upon eyewitnesses that told him. All right, then Paul does something absolutely extraordinary. Now watch, and here's what we need to be able to do. Please follow me on this. This is really important. Paul does something extraordinary in the next verse. Here's what he said he dares the Corinthians keep in mind, the Corinthians are not Jews. They were formerly philosophers and intellectuals. They were teachers. They were Greeks. They were smart people. They were into intellectual stuff. They were into prove it to me. That's what they were into. They were into new ideas, but they wanted to say, you better make a good case for it. You're not going to convince me unless you can give me an intelligent argument for why I should believe what you're saying. So here's what he said that to them. He said, I want you to fact check me. Watch verse number 5. He said, and that he was seen of Peter and then of the 12. All right, so right there, he is putting himself out there and he is saying, I am so sure Jesus was resurrected, and I'm going to tell you the people that you could go to and fact check me. That's what he said, right? He said, if you want to know whether or not Jesus really rose from the dead, go ask Peter. And then go ask any one of the 12. But he didn't stop there. Verse 6. After that, he was seen of more than 500 brethren at once. Paul is telling us why he believes. Are you following me on this? See, most of us, now doesn't that sound a whole lot better than, well, wouldn't you like to be able to say that rather than, well, that's just kind of how I was brought up. Well, I sort of had this experience. You know, we talked about that last week. Well, I saw this light in the sky and it sort of looked like a cross, and you know, and so I sort of put 2 and 2 together and I think Jesus was talking to me. I would rather have this, wouldn't you? So he is relating that there are at least 500 people who saw Jesus after he was resurrected. And he said, then, of whom the greater part remain unto this day. So he said, they're still alive. Most of them are still alive. He said, go ask them. You don't believe me? Go ask them. He said, I've asked them. He said, I went and talked to them. I didn't just put my faith in one person's testimony. He said, I talked to all these people. Verse number seven. So then he talks, probably the greatest witness that Paul, I would have guessed that this, James is probably the person that Paul put the most stock in. Because this is not James, the brother of John. This is James, the brother of Jesus. And he said, after that, he was seen of James and then of all the apostles. Now, let's take a time out. Why is James so important? Why does it matter to us that Paul said, I heard James tell that Jesus was resurrected? Why did that mean so much to Paul? Well, think about it. How many of you have a brother? Raise your hand if you have a brother. What would it take for you to be convinced? If your brother came to you and said, I'm the Son of God, what would it take for you to be convinced of that? Now think about it. James, who grew up with Jesus, James, who saw Jesus all through his childhood, his teen years, his young adult years, and we don't even have a record of James becoming a believer prior to the cross. James is never listed in any of the accounts of the disciples of Jesus. In fact, didn't Jesus one time when he was in a house and somebody came in and said, Jesus, your family's outside, and he said, what family? And then he said, did you know that a prophet is not without honor except in his own country? What he was insinuating there was, most of my family doesn't believe me. But I'll tell you when they did believe, after he rose from the dead. So when your brother dies and rises from the dead, suddenly you're convinced that he really is who he said he was. So again, the point here is that Paul is giving all of these names. He's giving these ways that the future generations could understand that this wasn't something that he just jumped on board this new fad called Christianity. He said, there's a reason why I believe. Remember when I asked last week, why do you believe? I'm just telling you why Paul believed. And Paul never said, well, I just grew up that way. He didn't grow up that way. In fact, he grew up opposite that. He grew up in Judaism. But he said, the reason I believe is because of all of these people who saw him not teach on the mountain, that he didn't say, I saw him heal people. He didn't say, I saw him do anything. He said, these people saw him come back to life after he died. Child of God, Christian. Christianity is about the resurrection. That's the foundation. This is why Paul believed it. So we're going to get to, just hang on with me. We're going to be done with the scripture here in just a minute. So verse number eight. Now he finishes up and he says, and last of all, he was seen of me also, as of one born out of due time. Now, if you don't know that story, you can read about that. It's in the book of Acts. But my point is, somebody look at that and say, yeah. That's all Bible stuff. I mean, the Bible can say anything, right? The Bible was written by people, and they could have all just gotten together and just said, hey, this is all true. And are they right about that? Hey, listen to me. Come on, get with me now. Your friends who don't believe, can't they say to you, look, you don't even know that Bible was written by, the Bible's just written by people. Right? They can say anything they want to. Just because the Bible says it doesn't mean it's true. So these are all Christians writing this. Of course they're going to say it's true. Are there any non-Christians who agree, who corroborate that Jesus rose from the dead? And that is where I want to go tonight. Because honestly, I don't need anything other than the Bible. Tony, you don't need anything other than the Bible, do you? But I guarantee you there are people sitting in this room right now, as small as this crowd is, there are people sitting in this room right now that say, you know what, I'd like to have something other than the Bible. I'd like to have something more than the Bible. Because I'm risking everything that it's true, that Jesus really rose from the dead, and that's the foundation of everything that I believe. So, here we go. So let's do a little scholarly study now, and let's talk about this. Is there any part of this story of Jesus that is extra-biblically corroborated? What that means is outside of the Bible. So I'm putting the Bible away, We're not going to use the Bible at all. Is there anything outside of the Bible? Is there anything, and we'll even go, well, in fact, let me just show you. There are three, anything Jesus-related, anything that talks about Jesus is going to come from one of three sources. It's going to be either, it's going to be history books that are either classical, which would be Greco-Roman, or that would be like Plato, Aristotle-y kind of things, okay? These philosophers, these intellectuals of that time. Or they would be Jewish, which would be anti-Christian, right? So you know, they'd be anti-Jesus. Because remember, the Jews, now keep in mind, I'm not being derogatory about the Jews, but the Jews did not believe in Jesus. They crucified him. They thought he was a heretic. They thought he was going against everything they believed in. Does anybody know why they thought that? He was going against everything their religion told them. Does anybody know why? Because he was. Because he did. They said, "You are changing our religion." And he said, "Yes, I am. Not only am I changing it, I'm basically wiping it out. And we're starting over with something brand new." He said, "All those laws, all that stuff that was right for a time, it's not right anymore, and I'm bringing in something brand new." So these are the sources now. So you've got classical, you've got Jewish, and then you've got Christian. Which two are we going to talk about now? Classical and Jewish. Because those are the ones that honestly should speak the loudest to us, because Christian sources are obviously going to say that Jesus really rose from the dead, yes? And so watch. So if somebody who's not a believer says, "You know what? You're right. It sure seems like Jesus died and was resurrected. That's what the evidence seems to show." If somebody who's not a believer says that, that ought to carry some weight for those of us who already believe, yes? Say, wow, even the unbelievers think he was real. Even the unbelievers think that he died and rose from the dead, some of them. So let's get into that. So here we go. Let's take a look. Now, before I get into that, though, let me give you a little side note here. There are some people who in teaching this, and I so appreciate our church, and I love our church, and I appreciate you all so much. You let me teach what I feel is right all the time. I've never been given much grief about that at all, at least by anybody here, and at least not anybody out loud. So I appreciate that. But there are some who would say, "Well, you know, Pastor, boy, you know, this just sounds like, I've heard preachers say intellectualism's bad, and we shouldn't be doing that." You've heard that before, right, Beverly? You know, there's some people say, "Well, you know, that's, faith is about just believing, just trusting. That's what faith is for." Well, you know, that's actually not biblical, and I'll show you why. Let me give you a couple of examples. Take a look at 1 Thessalonians chapter number 5. If that's what it was all about, why did Paul say, "Prove all things"? Why did he say that? And then he said, "Hold fast," or "keep that which is good." So basically, Paul said, when you come up against, you know, some things, and you're talking about spiritual things, and you're talking about, you know, the way things are, if you want to know who God is, he said, "Prove all things. Do your work. Do the study. Do the work. And then hold on to that which proves itself to be true, and let go of everything else." And then he also said in the book of Romans chapter 14, he said, "Let every man be fully persuaded in his own heart." In his own heart, follow your heart. No, you don't follow your heart. Why don't we follow our hearts? Heart is deceitful above all things, desperately wicked. Who can know it? Your heart's a liar. He said, be persuaded in your own mind. So, Christian, God is okay. Please hear me. God is okay with you wanting something more than just my word for it. And you wanting something more than even just the Bible saying so. He's okay with that. He's okay with you being a skeptic, not a critic, but a skeptic, saying, "I want to see some proof." There's nothing wrong then with your unsaved friend saying that. Hey, if somebody comes into Hope for the comes into Recovering Hope on Friday night, it is perfectly okay if they come in there and say, "Well, you know what? I'm being forced to come here." Right? Yeah, the court's making me come. Or, "I don't know, I'm going to check it out. I don't know what I believe." You love that, don't you? Because we believe that Jesus is the answer, but we also understand their perspective may be totally different. They could have had all kinds of experiences as to why they're not sure that Jesus really is who he is. So Paul said, it's okay for you to want to be fully persuaded in your mind. So we're going to put that to rest, and we're going to jump right into this. So let's talk about some non-Christians, or some reasons, some logical evidence. First of all, let's talk about an empty tomb. An empty tomb. So the first thing that you could actually talk about with somebody is an empty tomb. You know, public executions were public. They were public. They were done in front of the whole town. The whole town knew about it. Everybody knew where to go. Everybody knew where Golgotha was. And so they would go and they would watch somebody die. Their burials were also public. So they would follow the body. They would follow that trail and they would see somebody be buried. Why do you think that the Romans put a guard out in front of Jesus' tomb? Because they knew, everybody knew where it was. And suddenly, 3 days later, there's an empty tomb. Now, the Jewish leaders acknowledged that there was an empty tomb. You know, if you know the story, we talk about it at Easter sometimes, even the Jewish religious leaders who didn't want anybody to believe in the resurrection, they at least acknowledged there was an empty tomb. They said his disciples stole his body. So we have that. That's the beginning. But now let's move on to some people who were not Christians. All right, I want to talk about a man named Tacitus. Tacitus was a Roman historian. All right, now keep in mind, a Roman historian. Who was it that really killed Jesus? It was the Jewish leaders, right? But who carried it out? Who was the executioners? The Romans. So they're complicit in his death. They don't really want him to be real. They don't want him to have to really be the Son of God. But this Tacitus was an interesting guy. In fact, let's just get into his quote here. All right, so notice. So Tacitus was a Roman historian. He was talking this, and by the way, he was not addressing the issue of Jesus. Everybody hear me. Don't read yet. I need to tell you the backstory here. He wasn't really intending to talk about Jesus. He was talking about Nero. He was talking about the things going on in the days of Nero, which took place, you know, hundreds of years later. But here's what he said as a sort of a matter of, sort of an after the fact. But listen to what he says when he gets to this part about why what Nero did when things went bad, when the Nile would flood, the answer was always by Nero. The answer was always, well, it's the Christians. They've angered the gods. So let's throw a couple of them to the lions. That was his answer, okay? That was kind of the climate of the time. So here he goes. Nero fastened the guilt on a class hated for their abominations, called Christians by the populace. Now, Tacitus is not a Christian. He's not a believer. He doesn't even like them. But watch what he says here. Christus, talking about Jesus, from whom the name had its origin, suffered the extreme penalty during the reign of Tiberius at the hands of Pontius Pilate. All right, let's stop a minute. This is almost 300, or about 250 years after Jesus was crucified. Okay? He is validating, first of all, that Jesus was crucified, and who did it. All right, so he's validating the scripture that we read about it. Then he said this, and a most mischievous superstition thus checked for the moment again broke out not only in Judea. In other words, he said the movement was checked when he was crucified, but then it broke out again, the first source of evil, but even in Rome. All right, so he is validating Jesus being crucified. And then he says, and then something supernatural caused an explosion of a new religion. He said it was checked for a while. He said they killed him. He said, I'm talking about these Christians. Their leader was crucified. And that sort of ended it. And then something happened. Something remarkable happened. Notice he said, a most mischievous superstition. So he's referencing the fact that something happened supernaturally that caused this fledgling belief in some guy to suddenly explode and become what, in his time now, was a major, major religious movement. Does everybody follow what I'm trying to make there? So he is recognizing this, and he's a Roman. Bill? Yeah, well, and I think you got that, but I think you also have this, again, you have this thing of Christianity wasn't going anywhere in Jesus' time. Let's take a time out. Take time out. Jesus didn't have that many followers. Are we all on the same page about that? He had a few hundred followers. When did Christianity explode? Not while he was alive. It was after he rose from the dead. And then suddenly everybody got on board. Because you had all these hundreds of people who are saying, this guy that they killed, he came back to life, I saw him. And so that's what he's referencing here. So this is a Roman. So this would be one of these classical writers. And there are many others, but we don't have time tonight to go into that. Let's move on. Let's talk now about a Jewish writer, a Jewish historian named Josephus. Josephus was a Jewish historian. He was not a Christian, but he wasn't subject to the pressures of the Jewish historians by the religious leaders, because he actually kind of had aligned himself with Rome. So he was sort of independent. He didn't have to be really influenced by either one of them. So he wrote a work called Testimonium Flavianum, something like that. All right, so here we go. Here's what he wrote. Now watch this carefully. This is an outside source talking about the resurrection. And about this time there lived Jesus, a wise man. Now watch what he says next. If indeed one ought to call him a man. Now this is many, many centuries later. But he's writing about what he truly believed to be the truth. Are you with me? The closer you get to an event, the eyewitnesses saying they're sure something happened, doesn't that mean so much more? So, you know, for example, if we say, yeah, I remember, how many of you remember Adolf Hitler? I mean, you were alive then. Beverly, you? You're not sure if you were, Nancy? Okay, you don't know who Adolf Hitler is? Okay, that's okay. Beverly, so you were alive then, right? So if somebody came up to you and said, I don't think he really existed, what would you say? I know he existed. I saw him on TV. I followed him. Oh, yeah, there was no TV. But you see, that means so much more than... And she's going to believe, you know, and if she says, yeah, he existed, we're gonna give so much more credibility to her than we would to Cassie, right? Because Cassie's a liar, and we know that. I know, we know that. So, but you see what I'm saying? So he is writing about something way back when, and he is convinced. Now, here's what he said. Let's continue read. I ought to call him a man, for he wrought surprising feats. Now notice he's not churchy here, right? He's not a believer. He didn't say, oh, he healed the blind. And he said he wrought surprising feats. He was the Christ. Oh, wait a minute. He was the Christ? A non-believer saying this. He was the Christ. When Pilate condemned him to be crucified, those who had come to love him did not give up their affection for him. This is what blew him away. Because every leader he ever saw that said, I'm a king, and then he was killed, and his followers just went their way, and everything died. That's what he knew. But he said, even when he was crucified, they didn't give up their affection for him. On the third day, he appeared, restored to life, and the tribe of Christians has not disappeared. So, that's Josephus, yes. Yeah. Yeah, you know, he was a historian that was not a part of the movement. Now, again, there are many, many others of these. So we could go on and on down the list. I'm trying to tell you that there is, the point of this is, as we look at these kind of things, you know, these accounts are outside the boundaries of Christianity. These are people outside of Christianity who said that Jesus was crucified and that he rose again. So now when we think about the question, why do you believe what you believe? Well, it's because my mom and dad, I don't want to hear about your mom and dad. But now we can say, you know what, there were Christians at the time, many of them, hundreds of witnesses, who said that he rose from the dead. And if he rose from the dead, I'm pretty sure he is the Christ. I think he's the real deal. But not only those eyewitnesses, the decades and the centuries immediately following that, there were other people who became believers because of those accounts. But not just that. There were also people who never came to follow Christ who believed in him, who believed that he died and rose from the dead. Now, I don't know about you, I can't imagine why anybody would believe that he died and was buried and rose again and wouldn't become a follower. But that's who these guys were. So these are outside sources that believe that Jesus was who he said he was. So, and there were just a small group of people that followed a man who claimed to be the Son of God. But it's important for us to remember that these events were also all in the Gospels. Christianity didn't really exist yet. You know, in fact, let me say this. The Gospel accounts really are kind of what we could call outside the boundaries of Christianity. Think about it. The people who wrote the stories in the Gospels, they were eyewitnesses, right? They had seen everything that happened. But it wasn't really Christianity yet. It was just simply following a man who died. It wasn't until all these eyewitnesses began to talk about the fact that he rose from the dead. They all started getting together and saying, you know what? He really is who he said he was. He really is the Christ. And they started telling people. And as the people began to gather around that belief, suddenly the church was formed. Suddenly Christianity was born. So even the people who gave the first eyewitness accounts, they didn't even know that they were recording the beginning of a religion. All they knew was a guy said he was going to die and rise again. And he said he was God. And then he did it. So Christianity really didn't exist yet. So somehow these uneducated people, when you think about who Jesus came to then, he came to adulterers and thieves and lepers and fishermen and all these, but it wasn't that he convinced them to follow him that's so remarkable. What's remarkable, please get this, what is really remarkable is that then educated people like Dr. Luke, they listened to these adulterers and thieves and liars and fishermen. Their stories about Jesus were so compelling, so convincing, that Luke said, you know what? I believe that. I believe in that. And others did. And this is how the Christian movement was really born, because these guys were so convincing in what they said. Now, is that absolute proof of the resurrection? Is what we talk about tonight absolute proof? I could give you dozens of stories of secular authors who said they believe in the resurrection. Is it absolute proof? No. Is it a preponderance of the evidence? I think so. But Christianity wasn't founded on the teachings of Jesus. It was founded upon an event. Think about the event of the resurrection, the crucifixion and the resurrection. It was an event that was not only predicted, but it was also predestined by its leader. Think about it. Jesus actually ordained, God ordained Jesus' death. That means he ordered it and he approved it, because it's what had to happen for people to follow it. Remember when I said Jesus was no fool? Do you think that Jesus was blind to the fact that most of the people he came in contact with in his lifetime didn't follow him? Now think about it. They didn't follow him. He walked all over the place. He healed the blind. He healed the deaf. He healed the lame. He even raised people from the dead, and yet not everybody believed. Now can you imagine that? So Jesus said, my words alone are not going to be enough for Joe Cox in 2019. My teachings, and then I die and go back to heaven, or if I just teach and then I go back to heaven and nobody sees me again, that's not going to be enough for Austin Weigel. Weigel? Wiggle? Weigel? Wiggle? Yeah. I see that. That's not going to be enough for him in 2019. Jesus knew the only way for him to validate this brand new thing that he was instituting, this thing that was going to change the entire world, affect our calendars, and the whole world is going to focus on one person. He said, the only way that happens is if I die, if I tell them I'm going to die, and I'm going to come back to life. And so that's what he did. So to be a follower of Jesus, look, here's what it comes down to. Jesus didn't want Sherry to have to be basing her eternity on wishful thinking. Right? I think everybody should want the gospel story to be true. I can't imagine anybody who doesn't want it to be true. I'm going to talk about that on Sundays. Everybody should want it to be true. I mean, what Jesus said, how things ought to be, everybody should want that. Not everybody believes it is, but everybody should want it to be true. But he said, it's not going to be enough for you just to be wishful. I'm not going to leave you, Sherry, with just hoping. I'm not going to leave you with just, you know, wishful thinking, well, I don't know anything else. I'm just going to go with this because, no, he said, no, you know what? I'm going to give you something as the foundation, but it's not going to be the only thing. There'll be other things coming after. We'll spend a few weeks here coming up on real issues. But he said, we're going to begin with this one thing. I'm going to do something that nobody else has ever done. I'm going to do something that proves that I'm who I say I am. I'm going to do something that validates everything said about me. I'm going to die, and I'm going to resurrect. So to be a follower of Jesus Christ for the next, you know, however many years, in these first few centuries, it was a death sentence. Do you know to be a Christian in 200 AD was a death sentence? Or at least you were inviting massive persecution. As I said, what was Nero famous for? Anytime there was a famine, anytime there was a drought, anytime there was a fire, anytime there was a volcano, well, it's the Christians, they've angered the gods, let's throw some of them to the lion. That was the answer. And that's what Christians faced. Nobody would do that unless they were sure that the reports about Jesus were true. It is. But I wonder why. These guys, at least. See, today people can do that because they put their belief in what these guys back in this century following the crucifixion, they were so sure that Jesus' life and death and resurrection were true. And they had no reason to fear death. You know, it's an amazing thing. They fed them to the lions. They didn't care. They weren't afraid of death. It's pretty hard to hurt somebody who's not afraid to die. Think about it. That's why in the Bible, when you read about death, the followers of Jesus, they don't talk about death. They always call it what? Falling asleep. They weren't afraid of death. And so they were that convinced. They risked, these followers back in those days, they were so convinced that Jesus died and rose from the dead, and that made him God. And that made Christianity the right move. They were willing to risk it all literally. And so should we be. So as we continue to learn how to build a case, the foundation is always going to be what we talked about tonight, that Jesus did something that no other religious leader ever did. He proved that he was who he said that he was. We don't just have to have accidental faith. We can have evidential faith. And we're going to see a whole lot more in the coming weeks.